Good morning and welcome to Occupy the Airwaves. Okay, last week I talked about the terror campaigns of the United States in the past, comparing them to the terror campaign that is going on. Well, they openly say, if Ukraine loses this war, we're switching to, what do they call it, insurgencies. We're going to just teach them how to blow things up and terrorize civilians. Well, apparently they think Ukraine is losing because they've already switched to that. Last week they had invaded the southern part of Russia and tried to take over a few towns, injuring some civilians. And this week they sent drones in to attack apartment buildings and such in Moscow itself. Pure terrorism. There's no military targets there. Russia targets military targets and Ukraine targets civilians, including, as usual, in Donetsk City, which they've been doing for the last 9 years. They killed like five people with U.S. weapons, HIMARS, a couple of days ago. So yeah, pure terrorism. That's what they're going for. But I kind of also wonder if they are going to start on other countries, using people in other countries that are not quite as protected as the people of Donbass. The people of Donbass, of course, were originally part of Russia, and they literally have Russia on their border. You know, it's like the Ukraine, well, which is a proxy for the United States, is attacking Donbass, but the Russian bear mama came over the border and said, all right, that's enough of that. And so apparently the U.S. will turn to other ways of harassing mama bear. And one of them might be stirring up trouble in Serbia, because it certainly looks like that's going on. And it looks like they're also trying to stir up trouble in Moldova, which has a part of it called Transnistria, which is a Russian part. It's kind of like South Ossetia in Georgia. It is part of Moldova, technically, but it has independent status because of treaty. So the U.S. has had their eyes on attacking those people in Transnistria for a while. So I would look to those two places as a place where the U.S. will get their proxies to ramp up terrorism. And of course, they're doing it in Syria, too. It's pretty bad. Poor Syria. It's been putting up with this stuff since before the Ukrainians have. The Ukrainians, it was the Nazi coup in 2014. Syria, it was the ISIS and Al-Qaeda terrorists of 2011 that really started attacking it. And so they've been putting up with it longer. And the United States is occupying 30% of Syria and stealing their oil and stealing their wheat while the people of Syria go without energy or food. So that's pretty disgusting. Then they had that big old earthquake and the United States wouldn't lift the sanctions. They're like, no, we're trying to starve you out. Don't you get it? If we lift the sanctions, you might get better. We're not going to allow that. You are supposed to die until Assad is gone. And that is the way it is. Because that's state terrorism, basically. That's targeting civilian populations for a political purpose, which is what terrorism is. But usually you think of terrorists as a little group that goes and kills people in an apartment building or a nightclub. But what the U.S. does, it targets entire populations and tries to starve them all out. So we'll see what happens. I think that they will ramp things up in Syria, Serbia, and Moldova. Although the people of Moldova aren't really having it. They're like, we're not. Homie, don't play that game. So we'll see how it goes there. In any case, this week I thought I would talk about how fascism is coming on home. Because last week I talked about terrorism. I think most people who are in the know in the United States have watched the United States support terrorists openly at least since the 80s. If you know about the Contras, you know about Al-Qaeda, you know about Al-Qaeda in Yugoslavia, you know about Al-Qaeda in Syria and Libya, you know about ISIS in Syria, you know the United States supports terror. And I've been talking about how they supported Operation Gladio, that was in Europe, the Grey Wolves in Turkey, and the OUN in Ukraine. So the United States has a long history of supporting terrorists, and most people who have any idea about the history of the U.S. know that. But the idea of supporting Nazis, that is new. That's only since last year that they've been openly supporting Nazis. Now, they've been supporting Nazis, of course, as I pointed out before, in Ukraine from 1945 to 1955, and those Nazi terrorists in Ukraine killed 35,000 people, but that isn't really widely known. But ever since last year, when Russia entered the civil war in Ukraine, the United States and the mighty Mulitzer propaganda openly took the side of the Nazis in the Kiev regime. Instead of the anti-Nazis in Donbass, it was really kind of shocking to see Congress going, Slava Ukraine, which is a slogan, and they put their hands up. Oh my gosh, it's a slogan and a hand signal from literally World War II. And here you've got Nancy Pelosi and the rest of the trained SEALs in Congress doing it. It was actually shocking to me. And then they got the rest of Americans to do it because apparently Americans don't recognize Nazis when they see it. Well, here you go. It's coming on home. Attacking journalists is part of a police state, fascism, whatever you want to call it. When a totalitarian state clamps down, they clamp down on free speech, which Rich and I have talked about on many, many programs, but they also clamp down on journalists. For instance, Gonzalo Lira, who is Chilean, he has double citizenship, Chile and America. He is now in a prison. Ukraine's secret police, the SBU, picked him up and they admit that he's in prison and the charge is that he criticized the regime. I saw a reporter ask a State Department representative last week, well, what are you going to do about it? He's an American citizen, and your proxy government has him in jail for exercising his right to free speech. And the State Department person basically said, yeah, we know he's there. We know all about it. We're not going to do anything. It was pretty shocking. There's other journalists being persecuted in Ukraine. But they're also doing it here. And usually, we've also pointed out on this show and other shows that the Democrats have been using the police state apparatus, like the FBI and the CIA, to go after their political opponents. Well, now that they're in power, they're doing it even more openly, right? Because now that they're in power, they're just using the entire Justice Department, I put justice in air quotes, to go after their political opponents, such as Trump. But not just political opponents, now they're going after journalists, including Matt Taibbi, who is a Democrat journalist, right? Or at least he was. I don't think he's going to be anymore, but they're going after not just political opponents, not just political dissidents, like the political prisoners they've had in jail in Washington, D.C. for over 2 years, most of them without a trial. And one of them they just sentenced to 18 years. 18 years in prison for trespassing. Oh my gosh. But anyhow, Matt Taibbi is a journalist, and he was given access to the Twitter files by Elon Musk, and he started exposing how the Democrats and the national police state apparatus, such as the CIA and the FBI, worked together with the social media companies to censor and ban and suppress free speech in America. Rich and I have talked about that before. We covered the Twitter files when they first came out. So what was the Democrats' response to this journalism exposing that the police state had been used to attack the rights of Americans to have free speech? Well, they went after the journalist, just like they do in every banana republic police state totalitarian dictatorship. So this is by Chris Hedges, who is another journalist who has been targeted by the U.S. state. Chris Hedges fell out of favor way back in 2003 when the United States invaded Iraq under false pretenses, and he stood out against it. And while all the other so-called journalists were cheerleading it on, oh, look at the beauty of those weapons. It makes my leg tingle. I think that was, I can't remember who that was, but it was pretty disgusting. But anyhow, Chris Hedges has been on their outlist for quite a long time. Matt Taibbi, though, he was working at Rolling Stone, minding his own business, not being targeted by anyone until he went up against the totalitarians. And they didn't use, this time, they didn't use the so-called justice system against him. They use the IRS, which is pretty shocking to do that so openly, because the IRS is supposed to be this totally neutral place. They have nothing to do with the political apparatus of the government. Don't you worry. You just send in part of your paycheck every payday. The end of the year, maybe you'll get a refund. Maybe you'll owe more. But whatever, has nothing to do with the rest of the government. It's just there to collect money so they can, the rest of the government can go over and kill people in other countries. But don't worry about that. The actual IRS enforcement has nothing to do with how Congress spends your money after the IRS takes it. But no, they use the IRS to go after Matt Taibbi. A new law in a totalitarian police state. They are rapidly pulling the net in. Everything's getting tighter. So this is from consortiumnews.com. And it's by Chris Hedges, and it's the Democrat Party's revenge on Matt Taibbi. And it's from SheerPost originally. On December 24th, 2022, Matt Taibbi was in a room in the Park 55 Hotel in San Francisco, pouring through reports sent to Twitter from an entity called the Foreign Influence Task Force, FITF. The FITF is an FBI-led interagency task force that forwards moderation requests from numerous government agencies, including Homeland Security, which only started, you know, after 9/11, which was another big leap forward, the great leap forward toward the totalitarian police state in this country, the CIA, the Pentagon, and the State Department to social media outlets. Now, the CIA, of course, started after World War II. The State Department was here from the beginning. The Pentagon, I'm thinking the Pentagon was built after World War II also, because in the Constitution, there's no standing army. There's a standing navy, but there's no standing army, and Congress has to fund them every 2 years. They can't just have a, you know, continuing source of money, or that is how it is in the Constitution. That isn't how it works in real life America today. Anyhow, so these are the government agencies that are interfering with your right to free speech in the name of security. Homeland Security, the CIA, the Pentagon, and the State Department. And then they would go to social media outlets like Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. And they would say, well, we have citizens. Citizen number 495 has spoken out against us. He must be censored. She must be banned. And then the social media companies would go, yes, sir, yes, sir. Please do not throw us in jail, sir. And then they would do it. Taibbi was given access to the internal traffic by Twitter's new owner, Elon Musk, who they really hate now. They used to like him, but now they're really mad at him. It revealed how the FBI and other government agencies routinely suppress news and commentary. He published a Twitter thread that night, Christmas Eve, with the headline, Twitter and Other Government Agencies. There would be a list of YouTube videos, Taibbi said when I reached him by phone. And remember, this is Chris Hedges. Quote, there would be a notation that would say, we assess that these are all created by the Internet Research Agency in Russia. We assess that they are promoting anti-Ukraine attitudes. I would see that all those videos were no longer on YouTube. You can make your own deduction from that, but that was the pattern. They would send Excel spreadsheets full of account names and either all or most of them would be gone, unquote. The content that was suppressed included right-wing and left-wing reports critical of the dominant narrative advanced by the Democrat Party and the old establishment wing of the Republican Party, which has been folded into the Democrat Party. Threads from the Yellow Vest movements, activists from the Occupy movement, Global Revolution Live, negative stories about President Joe Biden, reports on the Ukrainian energy company Burisma that paid Hunter Biden about $1 million a year while his father was vice president, positive stories about Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, reports about Ukrainian human rights abuses, and details of the contents of Hunter Biden's laptop were part of the plethora of accounts that were flagged and disappeared. I was a victim of this censorship. Again, Chris Hedges. The 6-year archive of my show, On Contact, broadcast on RT America, was erased from YouTube, although not one show was about Russia and none violated YouTube's content guidelines. Episodes were later reposted on the Chris Hedges YouTube channel. Well, I'm glad he had it backed up because there's numerous YouTube people who just put things directly on YouTube, including journalists that were covering the war in Syria and that were covering the war in Ukraine. They would put stuff directly from where they were in Syria or Ukraine onto YouTube and thought it was some sort of, you know, secure place where they would always have it. And then YouTube went and wiped it all out under orders from the CIA. So that was a horrible thing. And also RT America, which was a news corporation that was paid for by Russia, the Americans just banned it. They just said, you know what? Nope, you can't have this here anymore. You know, because free speech and freedom of the press, right? Uh-huh. And then they have the nerve to complain about Russia. Russia is banning opposition outlets. Really? Because it sure looks to me like you banned an opposition outlet, except for all it was really was an alternative news. They weren't really anti-American. They were news that you didn't get on the regular news propaganda channels. Anyhow, back to Chris Hedges. The show gave a voice to those targeted, and he's talking about his show. The show gave a voice to those targeted by the FITF, anti-imperialists, anti-capitalists, prison reform advocates, Black Lives Matter and Palestinian activists, anti-fracking activists, and independent intellectuals, journalists and authors, including David Harvey, Noam Chomsky, Sami Al-Aryan, Glenn Ford, Amira Haas, Mamia Abdul-Jamal, Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, Medea Benjamin, Niels Meltzer, Panja Mishra, Glenn Greenwald, Matt Taibbi, and Cornel West. The FBI, before the release of Taibbi's Twitter thread on December 24th, had denounced the Twitter files as the work of conspiracy theorists who fed the public misinformation and whose sole purpose was discrediting the agency. "They must think us unambitious if our sole aim is to discredit the FBI," Taibbi responded. "After all, a whole range of government agencies discredit themselves in the Twitter files. Why stop with one?" Now they've made Taibbi mad, just like they've made Elon Musk mad. Just like they've made multiple countries around the world mad. They made India mad. They made South Africa mad. They made Brazil mad. You just can't go around the world bullying people and disrespecting people and expecting people to just bow down and do what you want. Not if they have an ounce of self-respect. All right, back to Chris Hedges. Taibbi was acutely aware these Christmas Eve revelations, which for the first time revealed the role of the CIA, would further enrage the intelligence agencies. "My understanding is that the FITF has a staff of at least 60, Taibbi said. "It consists primarily of the FBI, but it also includes people from the Department of Homeland Security and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, also a new office. The FITF was the conduit for content moderation requests that went to the tech platforms. They had something called an industry meeting, which was at first monthly and then weekly, leading into the 2020 election. It included companies like Twitter, Facebook, Google, Pinterest, Wikimedia, a series of others, about 24 of them. In other words, they were covertly influencing the election of 2020, while still lying to you that the election of 2016 was influenced by Russia, which turned out to be a total lie. But most people still don't know that because the media won't tell them that it's all been discredited, first by Mueller and most lately by Durham. Back to Taibbi. They would have a general briefing on trends. Individually, each of the companies were receiving notices. Some of them were receiving weekly notices from the FITF. Twitter was. "We know that because there were very specific instructions about how it was done. Requests that came from the states went through the DHS. Requests that came from the federal government went through the FBI. They went through a program called Teleporter. That's how we got those documents." In March, Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger were called to testify before the Select Subcommittee on Weaponization of the Federal Government. Weaponization of the federal government. That's exactly what's been done. They're using the federal government to go after Americans, both through the justice system and, as you'll see, through the IRS. While Taibbi was testifying on March 9th, an IRS agent visited his house in New Jersey. Taibbi discovered that the IRS opened a case against him on the day he published his Christmas Eve Twitter thread from a letter House Judiciary Chairman Jim Jordan sent to IRS Commissioner Daniel Werfel inquiring about Taibbi's case. It was a Saturday. It was Christmas Eve. Taibbi did not owe any taxes. The case was 4 years old. All of this suggests that the IRS case was politically motivated and the FBI was monitoring Taibbi. Now, how did they get the IRS, which is, again, supposed to have nothing to do with the rest of the government, how did they get him on a Saturday Christmas Eve to open a case? That's pretty amazing and disgusting, and downright scary. There's probably little doubt that they were at least closely following all the Twitter files reporters, but probably they were monitoring in other ways too, Taibbi deduced. "One of the reasons I agreed to testify before the weaponization of government committee, and I got a lot of grief from old lefty friends who were upset I was appearing before a Republican-led committee." So Taibbi, like I said, known as a Democrat with lefty friends, is reporting on weaponization of government. And when a congressional committee is set up to investigate weaponization of government, his so-called left friends are upset because Republicans are doing this. So you're left. A left person is supposed to stand for principles, not parties. You're supposed to stand for free speech and freedom of the press, not Democrats. That That is absolutely disgusting. And to literally hassle a guy who is reporting on weaponization of government because he appears in front of Congress, in front of a weaponization of government committee, hassle him about that? What kind of nonsense is this? Left. All right, back to Tahibi. The reason he agreed to testify was that the other mainstream news reporters weren't picking up a lot of these stories that I thought really needed some attention. You think? I needed other reporters to do some work on this. My thinking was if I testified in Washington, it might get some attention, not just nationally, but maybe globally. Unquote. Well, that was pretty naive of Matt Tahibi. So he thought, why am I the only reporter working on this? Maybe the other reporters are not reporting on it because they just don't know about it. Sure, Tahibi, they're not reporting on it because the media is controlled by big money and the deep state, the CIA and the FBI. You're just looking how they controlled social media. Well, they control the regular media too. So that's why your friends aren't reporting on it, because they're afraid to and they're not allowed to. And if they did, they'd get fired. Yeah. And you thought if you testified in Washington, you'd get more attention? No. If the mighty Wolitzer doesn't talk about it, if the mighty Wolitzer didn't report it, it never happened. And it doesn't matter how important the story is or how devastating the story is. Actually, the more devastating the story, the more it's going to be covered up. All right, back to Chris Hedges. Tahibi ran into a buzzsaw of orchestrated character assassination. The Democrat members of the committee rarely let Tahibi speak, and I don't know if anyone saw this, but it was pretty disgusting. They delivered vicious and insulting diatribes. Here's a clip of Democrat Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was a criminal. Why is she in Congress? She should be in prison. What she did to Bernie Sanders in 2016. Come on now. Along with Sam Cedar and other hosts at the Majority Report attacking Tahibi. And then if you go to Consortium News, you can see it. I expected there to be hostility in the questioning, but what happened in that hearing was amazing, even to be involved with as a spectator, he said. And I can testify for that. I've seen clips of it. And you're like, are you kidding me? How are these people? These people are not letting, they're asking questions. And when he tries to answer, they go, I have the floor. You know, they're insulting him. They're telling him he's not a reporter. They're calling him every name under the book. And they won't let him answer. They won't let him testify. They each get their little time to yell at him so that they could put it in their, I guess, so that they could put it in their campaign when they ask you for money. Look at me. I'm a fascist attacking a journalist. Please send me money. Every bit helps. Back to Tahibi. Rather than engage with the material of the Twitter files reported on any level, even negatively, it was pure character assassination. The ranking member called us a direct threat to people who oppose us. We were so-called journalists. We were the lapdogs and scribes of Elon Musk. We didn't believe in Russian interference. We didn't respect authority. I had a tinfoil hat I was told to take off by one member. It was one member after the other creating clips of videos that were replayed on MSNBC and CNN later that night. That was how people got the news about that hearing, unquote. So again, character assassination, insults, and refusal to ask questions and then listen to the answers somehow impressed people that listen to MSNBC and CNN. It's kind of like terrorist attacks on apartment buildings and children. You know, apartment buildings in Moscow and children in Donetsk City. These are waved in front of the American people as great victories of some sort or another. You know, look, we did a terrorist act. Aren't we great? Slava Ukraine. I don't understand how people can look at this stuff. Pure up and down bullying by these fools in Congress to a reporter for reporting. And then they play it like people are supposed to be proud of them. Oh, look, you're a bully. Oh, I'm just so impressed. I just love bullies. Bullies are awesome. I just don't get it. I don't know how anyone could watch this stuff and be proud of this kind of behavior, this kind of lawlessness, this kind of indifference to the principles of the Bill of Rights. And these are people sworn to the Constitution. Elected members of Congress, and they have absolutely no respect at all for the Bill of Rights. All right, then Tahibi again. We grew up in an atmosphere where the Democrats were always the champions of free speech, more so than the Republicans. Throughout the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even the early 2000s, suddenly, on this issue, it was wall-to-wall hostility. There wasn't a Dennis Kucinich or Bernie Sanders type who stands out from the crowd. There are no dissenters in the ranks of this party anymore. The old school ACLU-like liberals, they're just gone now, and so's ACLU. There's this new movement that doesn't believe in countering bad speech with better speech. They believe in closing it off and shutting it down. That's what the Twitter files were about. That's why there was so much hostility, unquote. Again, he's absolutely right. The idea of free speech is if you don't like what someone says, then you say, well, this is how I look at it, and you're leaving out the facts, which Debbie Wasserman Schultz wouldn't even let him give the facts. No, they believe in flat-out censorship and banning. They believe in silencing truth-tellers. They believe in silencing all dissent. They don't believe in free speech at all. Why are they in Congress and the United States of America, founded on the principles of we know this to be true, we're all created equal, we all have inalienable rights that the government can't take away, and now here they are, representatives of the government, trying to shut people up and stamp out free speech and stamp out the free press? I don't understand why Americans are putting up with this. I really don't. Taibbi was informed that there were problems with his 2018 tax return. The IRS said it had sent him letters about the issue, but Taibbi had not received any letters, and the IRS refused to produce copies. In other words, see, we don't need no stinking evidence. We tell you you're in trouble with the IRS, you're in trouble with the IRS. He also had electronic confirmation from the IRS that his 2018 tax return had been received. Uh-oh. Doesn't matter. It's evidence. They don't need evidence. It was only when Congressman Jordan wrote to the IRS asking for clarification that Taibbi became aware of the files the IRS had amassed on them. These included information taken from search engines and commercial investigative software such as Anywho, Consumer Affairs, and LexisNexis. They had his voter registration records, whether he possessed a hunting or fishing license, whether he had a concealed weapons permit, his telephone numbers, articles he had written, and articles written about him. The IRS. Why would an IRS agent need to know anything about my professional history or about controversies I'd been involved with or things I'd been written about, he asked. That seems pretty dubious. Well, if you've ever seen Matt Taibbi, he's a very soft-spoken guy. He's very moderate. He's not like me. I'm going, this is outrageous. These people should be thrown out of Congress. He's like, that seems kind of dubious, but that's how he is. They're not worried about the optics, about doing something like sending an IRS agent to the home of a journalist who has a big platform and a reputation for not being afraid to say something about it. They're not worried about how this looks. It's concerning for a number of reasons. It reminds you of things you would see in a third world country. Unquote. Taibbi was interviewed by MSNBC host Mehdi Hassan. Hassan, or his researchers, has combed through Taibbi's report and found a couple of very minor errors, including a confused timeline and a misplaced acronym. Hassan argued that the errors were evidence that Taibbi intentionally lied to Congress. U.S. Representative Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez seconded the accusation. Great. So Miss Lefty Lefty is saying you lied to Congress because you used the wrong acronym. Yeah, real lefty. The ranking committee member, Stacey Plaskett, sent Taibbi a letter accusing him of lying to Congress, and she threatened Taibbi with a 5-year prison sentence. There are 3 steps to destroying a reporter who can't be bought off or intimidated. The first is a campaign by the powerful, whose lies and crimes have been exposed, along with their obsequious courtiers in the press, to discredit the reporting. The second is a sustained campaign of character assassination. The third is persecution carried out once the reporter's credibility has been weakened, his or her ability to publish or broadcast is degraded, and public support has eroded. This is what happened to Julian Assange. Before Assange, it happened to Don Hollenbeck, I.F. Stone, Gary Webb, Ray Bonner, and many others. It is what is happening to Taibbi, whose revelations of widespread censorship by the FBI, the CIA, Homeland Security, and other intelligence and government agencies have enraged the ruling class. I don't know if they will win. Let us hope not. But the deafening silence by nearly all press outlets to what they are doing to Taibbi, as it is true for Assange, is ominous and self-defeating. It sends a signal to those who attempt to report about the inner workings of power that no matter how well-known you are or how high a profile you have, you too will be targeted. The concerted attacks on Taibbi are an example of how the walls are steadily closing in to impose an iron conformity, one more piece of our emergent corporate totalitarianism. Anyhow, I don't have time to finish the whole article, but it is on consortiumnews.com and it's also on sheerpress.com. SharePost.com. Robert Scheer is another reporter who was kicked out for being honest and uncompromising. So yeah, totalitarian corporatism. That's one way to call it. I call it fascism. All right, that's the end of Occupy the Air. We'll see you next week.